I'm Claire.
And I'm Jessica. And this, it'll only hurt a little. Today, we're going to be talking about both of our chronic illness journeys, but we're going to start with Claire way, way long ago, back in 1999.
So pretty much before I was even born, my parents knew that I was going to have some sort of medical issues. They knew in utero. And so when I was born, they realized that I had hydronephrosis on my right kidney, which pretty much means my kidney is blocked off completely and it cannot drain properly. And then right before my surgery, they decided on a whim to do a scan and saw that I actually also had an ectopic ureter, which was good to know because that would have been really bad if they hadn't fixed it. So at 3 weeks old, I had my first surgery, and that's kind of where my story began. So obviously I've always grown up having medical problems and seeing lots of doctors and specialists. I started with doctors at UC San Francisco, and then when I was around 11, I got mono, and I was super sick, and it affected my body really strongly in a way that we weren't anticipating. And for about 3 months, I was on bed rest, and I had to do school from home. And then fast forward, I am over mono. We do blood tests, and everything looks fine, but I'm still not feeling myself, and about a year passes, and I'm still, like, having terrible migraines and, like, feeling really faint and dizzy, and I just didn't feel like myself. I never recovered.
Also, side note, where you were living at the time, there just was not great medical care in that particular area, and it was really difficult to seek any sort of attention.
Yeah. There was no specialist. I was seeing a pediatrician who did not believe me and just kept telling me, oh, you're vitamin D deficient, which doesn't make sense because we lived at the beach and I was outside all the time playing and at the beach all the time. And there's no reason for me to be vitamin D deficient, but they were not looking into it at all. Which was super frustrating, and I feel like a lot of people with chronic illness can tell that same story, that they weren't listened to. I was told to see a psychologist, that I was making it up, and at that point, me and my mom were just so angry, because when you feel so sick, you know your body, and you know that what's going on isn't normal for you. So it was just so frustrating to feel terrible and have no medical professional even listen to me or hear me or pay attention to me.
Yeah. And I think as a mom, it's really frustrating because you're believing your child and seeing that things aren't right also, and someone needs to advocate for your child, but nobody's listening.
Right. So that kind of kept going on for another couple years. And I just got worse and worse, and nobody would pay attention to me. Until finally I switched doctors, and I had been seeing this other doctor for a little bit, when I met another girl who actually was a friend of a friend, and she had what's called postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. And she explained the symptoms to my mom and I, and we were both like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I've been experiencing, like, the last 5 years. And she was like, I'm sure you have it. You need to talk to a doctor about it. And she was seeing a doctor at Stanford. And so I went to my GP, and I told her, hey, like, I don't know if you know much about POTS, but I met somebody else who has it, and it sounds a lot like what I'm feeling. And she at first kind of was like, well, probably not. The other patients I see are so exhausted that they don't do anything at all. Visible illness or an invisible disease, which I definitely resonates with me. I'm pretty athletic for how sick I am. I danced all the time. I was not totally going to school. I was doing a lot of school at home, but I would go to like my theater class on campus, and I just always have like a positive disposition. So looking at me, she was like, I don't think so, but I'm willing to run tests.
I remember Mom would always send pictures of you asleep in the car.
Yeah, literally.
Like, it would be like snapshot of Claire, and you'd be like head back, mouth open.
Literally mouth open, drooling, asleep in the car. I seriously, like, my school was probably like 7 minutes away from our house, if even that. And on the 7 minute drive to school, I would fall asleep, yeah. Which is like ridiculous. Like, nobody falls asleep on their way to school. That's so silly. So like, realizing, wait a second, there's actually a reason this is happening. It was like, oh my God, like, of course. So she ran the tests, and she just did an in-office, like, lay down, sit up, stand up, taking my blood pressure, checking my heart rate, that sort of thing. And she was like, wow, like, just from this in-office test, this looks like POTS. I think you're right. And so,
sorry, I grabbed the mic. I don't know why.
I was going to make noise. Stupid. Okay. So.
You came here. I remember she referred you to a cardiologist.
I first saw a cardiologist
at the Children's Hospital in our area. So I had to drive 3 hours all the way here to go and see a cardiologist that, you know, specifically saw children, because again, in your area, there was nobody.
And I was only like 12 or 13 at the time, I think.
Yeah.
And so we went to cardiologist. They did the test. They're like, your heart's normal. So we think that your doctor's right. We think this is POTS. We see that you have a really high heart rate and then it drops suddenly, which seems like POTS, but you don't have any like heart defects or anything like that that's concerning. So they then put me in contact with Stanford, and I saw the great Dr. Girade at Stanford Neurological
Special place.
Neuro something.
The neurology clinic at Stanford, yes.
There you go.
And Dr. Safwan Girade, and I hope I'm saying his first name right. I may not be, but he's just incredible.
He's amazing. He totally saved both of us. So I saw him, and right away we did blood tests, we did a tilt table test, we did sweat tests, and he was like, yeah, you have POTS. Your mom was right. There you go. There's your diagnosis. And I was like, for the first time ever, it's like, you know, for me, it was very different from what Jessica experienced, which she'll talk about. But for me, it was kind of like a breath of fresh air. It was like relief, because I had been struggling for so long and been like reaching and trying to get this diagnosis for years. And so to finally have a name attached and know that there's a medication that might make my life a little easier, it was like, oh my God, like, thank God, because it's exhausting trying to get a diagnosis and searching for answers constantly and not getting them. And so I got that diagnosis, and right off the bat, he sent me to the urologist there because I do have the hydronephrosis, and then he also sent me to a gastroenterologist. And so I kind of got that ball rolling, and then...
But you have to, like, touch on the gastro part, because that was your entire life. right. dealing with gastro and just, like, not knowing what is going on. Why is this happening? You had, like, the cutest belly and their adorable pictures. And I think we should post maybe, like, at least one because it was so cute. But it was always, like, hard as a rock. And you had horrible reflux and you were always having stomach issues. But nobody really knew why. And when you went to the gastroenterologist, I said that so wrong.
No, that was right.
Okay. You finally, like, had tests going on, and it was, like, literally up until that point, you had had this, like, bloated belly. Because you found out.
Yeah, because I had bacterial overgrowth in my gut.
Yes.
Which we found out by doing this really weird test where I had to eat, like, radioactive eggs, which was so gross because I don't even like eggs. But they, like, took x-rays as I was digesting the eggs, and then I did a breathing test where I had to drink this sugar water, which made me so nauseous, and I ended up throwing up, which I felt so bad. Because then they have to start the test over if you throw up. Seeing the gastroenterologist was a big change for me, and it was definitely, like, a proverbial corner in my health journey, because first, my diagnosis with POTS was obviously huge, but something I had been really struggling with my entire life was my gastro issues and just always feeling super bloated and just not feeling well. My stomach was always, like, hard, and every time I would eat, I would feel extremely nauseous to the point where I didn't even want to eat, or it made it hard to eat a normal quantity of food. So I'd have to just do, like, tiny snacks all the time, which just makes it impossible for you to live your life normally. So I met with the gastroenterologist, and they put me on a medication that would help with the bacterial overgrowth. But when I first met with her, she was like, hey, you know what? Like, this sounds a lot like you might have Ehlers-Danlos also, which was something I had never heard of before. And she did a test, had me move around, tested my skin, and looked at, like, all my veins and everything, and she was like, yeah, I'm almost positive you have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And my neurologist agreed. He said, yeah, this definitely sounds right, and it's also really commonly seen in people who are under the dysautonomia umbrella. When you have dysautonomia, it's super common for you to also have Ehlers-Danlos. So this diagnosis definitely made sense to me, and it gave me a lot of answers and gave me a lot of relief, because the symptoms that I had that felt so weird and, like,
for your entire life.
Yeah, for my entire life. I've always felt like this. And so for it to be like, yeah, this is actually a thing that people have, and this is totally treatable and obviously not curable, but there are ways to improve your life and live with Ehlers-Danlos and POTS. And so getting on new medication, getting on a beta blocker and a blood pressure medication totally turned my life around, and I was feeling so much better. I could actually, like, get out of bed, because for a long time it was like getting out of bed was a chore, and taking a shower was impossible, which it's still hard to take a shower. Yeah. I definitely
do that before bedtime.
I definitely sit while I'm in the shower, not gonna lie.
Yeah.
I sit on the ground because if I stand in the shower, like, the mixture of standing and the hot water makes me so dizzy that, like, it's impossible to...
I find myself, like, unable in the shower to even close my eyes, because I'm like, if I close my eyes in the shower and I'm like, oh, it feels so good, then I'm like, whoa.
You get all, like...
Yes, super dizzy.
Start falling over.
Yes.
And that's, like, the worst place to fall over. Like, nobody wants to be found dead and naked.
Definitely, please, no. Cover my body. Yeah. If you find me, just cover me. Just leave me there.
Throw a towel call
yeah,
me?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I found her, but I put that over
like,
her.
And it's, like, also the look when you, like, get your hair done at the hairdresser, and they, like, wash your hair, and you go back to the chair, and you look like a wet rat.
Yes,
so you're,
yes.
like, a wet, naked rat.
Sometimes it looks like you look like you have, like, maybe a mullet going, because it's all tight and wet to your head, and then
slick.
Hanging down in the back. Yeah, that's
you're
cute.
Like, ooh.
Well, that's a cute look for me.
But you have, like, a full face of makeup on.
Yes.
It's definitely looks. So.
But, I mean, it's a real thing to consider,
yeah.
because, you know, sitting is helpful because you do worry...
Yeah.
And it's very real that you could get dizzy and pass out. And who's to say that that, one, hasn't happened to people already, I am sure. And two, you know, isn't going to potentially happen to either of us.
Yeah. And I don't know. I feel extra dizzy in the shower. So that is definitely something that was, like, really, really hard for me. And it has gotten easier, but it is still difficult. Which it's, like, so silly to look at as, like, a normal, abled person to, like, for, like, our dad especially to understand, like, that taking a shower is really hard for us. Like,
yeah.
he can't understand that. Or, like, my mom obviously is also normally abled or whatever you want to call it.
An able-bodied person. Yeah.
And she can't ever understand that it feels hard to shower, you know? And there's a lot of things like that that are, like, it's really hard to go upstairs, and it's really hard, you know, it's really hard to stand for long periods of time, or, you know, it's really hard for me to go to the grocery store because the lights really affect me, and I feel super dizzy in the grocery store, and...
Looking around, just, like,
yeah.
at a grocery store,
or like
even...
reaching for something
yes.
on the bottom shelf, like, that's almost
yeah.
impossible for us. So it was definitely, it brought light to, okay, what I'm feeling, other people also feel.
It's real. It's not just, you know, something that you are creating or you need to just exercise
just
and it'll make it better.
Yeah. So that's kind of my journey. Since then, I also was diagnosed with severe sleep apnea, which I had surgery on about 3 years ago, and it was a super cute, fun experience.
Yeah, they just cracked open your palate.
They cut under my lip and cut open my whole palate and spread it wide, and I had, like, a gap the size.
It was so cute.
It was
so cute.
It was so funny. It was an experience.
Yeah.
I had, like, a gap between my two front teeth the size of, like, my finger, which was really... I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was obviously a really hard procedure, and it was a really difficult...
You couldn't feel your face. Your face
yeah.
was super swollen.
All
the nerve damage.
I couldn't eat regular foods. I couldn't blow my nose. Like, things that everybody can do, I
And on
do.
Top of it, you were vomiting because of the pain.
Right, because of the pain.
Which is... Ugh.
And the pain meds gave me a terrible reaction. So I had that surgery about 3 years ago, and since then I've just been managing all my medications, managing pain, and constantly still seeing my neurologist. I had a flare-up a couple months ago, like 6 months ago maybe.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah, which my mono titers were up. We have chronic mono.
Epstein-Barr virus.
Right,
Boo.
Chronic EBV. So, constantly pretty much dealing with that where we just will...
But it was a pretty big, bad flare.
Yeah, it was a bad flare-up, and I was just...
Had to get the COVID test because,
yeah,
you know, symptoms and stuff.
I was like, oh, I feel absolutely awful. Turns out it was just EBV. So, you know, always managing and trying to figure out what works best for me. And working hand in hand with my neurologist at Stanford just to figure out how we can make my life as easy as possible so that I can live a normal life and be as independent as possible. And we're hoping to continue to get myself to a place where I can be completely independent. But it's a long journey.
Yeah.
So.
Currently living at home with your mom and dad.
Yeah.
Which is fine. There's
21 years
yes,
later.
But that's okay. I mean, you know, it's really hard, I think, to find I think it'll be interesting to do a chronic illness dating world episode because it's really hard to do those things or to move in with roommates and have someone able-bodied that fully understands like what they need to, you know, pay attention to or, you know, just being super empathetic as far as, okay, you're not feeling great. That's fine. Like, I can do this chore. That's tricky. So yeah. In the meantime, I think it's fine to,
yeah.
You know.
And the year I did live alone, I lived literally like 30 minutes from my parents and from Jessica and our brother Jordan. So it was nice to have a little bit of freedom, but also have the ability to rely on my family. And then also, I had an amazing roommate who, she was so willing to bring me to the hospital over and over again when I had chronic migraines that wouldn't go away.
Yes.
And, you know, like, when that one time I thought I was having a heart attack, you know. And
normal things when you have POTS. Things. Yeah.
And she was always willing to bring me and sit there all night long with me. And so it's so important to have that support system, and I definitely have that through this whole journey.
Yeah.
And
super grateful for Jen. She's been there a lot because she was there through your procedure also.
She laid with my chubby face self.
Yes.
With my huge cheeks that I couldn't even see out my eyes, and my mouth was like bleeding. It was so cute.
Mm.
And she stayed in the hospital the night. I could only have one person stay in the hospital with me. Then I had my surgery, and my grandma and my mom were there, and she had to sleep in a chair, so obviously it wasn't going to be great for my grandma or my mom, and so my grandma and mom went and got a hotel and slept in a regular bed, and Jen slept in the chair next to me. Yes,
very important to have those kinds of friends, the friend that's going to do that.
While my neighbor in the hospital was screaming all night, I was like, sorry, Jen.
No.
Yeah, so and then also it's been great because me and Jess, I kind of went through this right before Jess went through this. And so I was able to support her as well.
Yeah. So my journey is definitely very different because I was essentially a quote unquote able-bodied person my whole life. I remember being really young and really flexible and thinking like, oh, these are cool tricks. Look, I can put my foot behind my head, or I can bend in half and hug my legs. Or when I was in junior high and I was on the cheer squad, I remember insisting on being in the middle back row so that I can do, like, you know, the double elbows Y shape thing up, because I thought it was so funny that my elbows bent in double a little bit more. Yeah. And so, like, the curvature of my fingers, when I put my fingers straight, like, I have to really focus and relax to make them straight. Otherwise, they're just like whoop-a-loop-de-loop. And I just thought those were, you know, funny, neat tricks. I remember having Epstein-Barr virus, like, when I was probably 15, just before Claire was born, because we had moved to the coast. We move a lot. Side note, not anymore, but then. And we had moved to the coast. It was closer to UCSF, and that was better. And there was an issue with the house we were moving into. So I was staying with my grandma. I was super sick and tired, and I had Epstein-Barr virus, but it wasn't, you know, as big of a deal for me. I don't remember feeling specifically anything different from that point on. I do remember prior to getting sick several years ago having chest pains and things like that, but I just thought, you know, it was normal, it wasn't a big deal, it was whatever. And I was able to play all the sports and, you know, be like the conductor of my family orchestra and managing my kids and everything. I had some issues with both pregnancies, but nothing super alarming. I did have hydronephrosis with my last pregnancy, which was really ironic and interesting, but didn't really think much of it. After I had him, no problem. That's like it went away.
Happens with some pregnancies.
I guess, but it was just very, you know, bizarre that I had what you had had.
Yeah, and something you're familiar with already.
Yes.
Because, like, if a normal or
if someone that hasn't heard that word before.
Yeah, it doesn't have anybody in their life who has had it. They'd be like, oh my gosh, I've never had this before. Yeah. What is this? But you're like, oh, I know exactly what that yeah. is. I know exactly what it's like.
Exactly. So, fast forward several years. What was the year that you graduated high school?
2017, 2018.
No, 17. You're right. It was 17. So it was 2017, and I remember I had a client, and she was like, hey, I don't feel good, and do you want me to cancel? And I was like, no, I'm going out of town for a long weekend. It's my sister's graduation. Like, just come on in, whatever. We'll get it done. She was, like, coughing and sneezing. I was a little bit like, eh, is this a good idea? But whatever. I wanted to get it done and get out of town. So I see her. We go out of town. Claire graduates on Friday, her party is on Saturday, and Sunday at probably like 4 a.m. in the morning, I remember waking up and just feeling like my throat was closing, and I was actually having anxiety about it because it was so bad. So I kind of laid there until everyone was up, and I went and I told my mom, even though I'm like a 30-something-year-old adult, you always go to your mom, obviously.
Moms know everything.
Yes, they do. And so they're still living in the beach community that just doesn't have the best medical care, not a big deal, you know. So we go to the urgent care, they swab my throat, I test positive for strep, and I start medication. And by the next weekend, we went to our cousin's high school graduation party, and I remember just complaining about my joints because sitting to standing was so painful, and it just didn't feel right. I napped multiple times that week, which I was never a napper. I had been, you know, taking an interval circuit training class multiple times a week and sub teaching that class also. So
she's always been like the go get it, like always doing something.
Yeah.
Always busy, always working out.
Go, go, go all yeah. the time, and like never fatigued by it. And
always
able.
On the ball.
Yes. Always. Lost that. anyway, so I go to my general practitioner for several months thereafter because my throat is still hurting, and we're running all these blood tests. She sends me to the cardiologist because I'm having chest pain multiple times a week, and everything looks good and looks clear. And in the meantime, my mom's in my ear like, ask for a tilt table test. And so I asked the...
Because we had just gone through this with me.
Yes, yes. So I asked the cardiologist, can I get that? And they kind of, well, we'd have to send you to a special place. And your heart looks fine, so you're fine. And I'm starting to think this is maybe in my head, or maybe I'm creating this because Claire had always been sick, and it was some sort of like... I don't even know, and I was just making it up, but I knew. Yes, I was like, what is going on? This is so weird. I am forgetting things. And so my general practitioner, thankfully, she was honest, and she said, you know, I don't know what is going on with you. We're going to refer you to Stanford. And so I get a referral to their rheumatology, but Stanford inside of that realm, they decided to send me to a pain management clinic, which I wasn't really happy about because I didn't want just pain management. They gave me medication so that my pain receptors were blocked and I couldn't feel the pain anymore, but I didn't necessarily feel much relief as far as like fatigue and joint pain. I was still feeling a lot of just chest pains and all of that. It really only took care of the constant headaches I was having every single day. So again, fast forward a little bit, I did like a spinal fluid leak MRI, which took an hour and a half. I literally thought I was going to die in that machine. It was so long and claustrophobic, and I just wasn't prepared. I didn't know that it was going to be so long, and I was really going to have a difficult time with it. And we're literally that complete next summer, we're in the car driving to the airport to go out of the country, and I just got on the phone and I called my pain management specialist at Stanford, and I said, you have to send me to neurology But, of course, you know, this is all thankfully because my mom is saying, like, you need to do this. You need to go there. You need to see him. This is exactly the same. I remember I had called my mom one day in the spring and just I was, like, crying and I was driving the kids to school. I had slept, like, 10 to 12 hours the night before, which was my new normal, and I thought I was going to fall asleep driving the kids to school, and she was just like, okay, it's time. We need to move back. We need to be there. Something is not right. And so you guys decided to move back, which timing-wise ended up being just like perfect because there were a number of other things that were really beneficial for her to be here. So I get to Girarde after we get back from our trip at the end of the summer. It's been 14 months. He looks at he, you know, does all the tests and in the office tests, like, stand here. Can you feel this? Is this, you know, needle dull or is it sharp? And close your eyes and look here and look there. And I remember he hadn't even done a tilt table test or a sweat test or anything yet. And he sits down and my sister and my mom are there with me. And he looks at my mom and says, so what are your symptoms? And she says, none, I don't have any symptoms. And he says, this is a genetic response. This is something that both of your girls have all of these things going on. Their cases are super similar. Just, you know, somehow I had gotten this far in my life without really dealing with any of these things.
Which, meanwhile, our mom is, like, the least flexible person we know.
Yes.
And she can, like, do everything, no problem. Yes. She can't take a nap even if she tried, like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Complete opposite of us.
She can't, like, more like how I was before. Yeah, like, yeah. She's just, like, go, 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 and doing all the things and taking care of everyone. And
yeah.
So
not feeling any of
no symptoms.
Yeah,
definitely not. So I take the tilt table test. I do the sweat test. I have a brain MRI. Not only did I definitely have POTS, but my virus had been it had been so inflamed in my body and my titers were still so high 14 months later. It had gone to my brain and I had white matter on my brain and I was saying the most ridiculous things. I couldn't connect dots. Yes, forgetting everything. I mean, I would get to the end of an appointment with my client and not remember what their name was. It was so bad. And still to this day, you know.
Which is not like her at all.
No. And so, yeah, basically
and
that.
Very silly things.
Very silly things, you know. Very
peanut
silly.
Butter on the squirrel.
Put your peanut butter on the squirrel right now. And still, I totally, you know, we both make mistakes a lot in words and verbalization, yeah. But I just think that is what it is.
And it's fun a little bit to laugh at each other.
It is, yeah, it is.
Since we both understand what's going
yes,
on.
Yes, yes.
I'll be like, what did you just say?
Yeah. don't worry about it. You know what I mean. Just move on.
Yeah.
So I really had this moment of relief at first. I remember I was just crying in the office. It was just, I couldn't believe it that, you know, okay, I knew my body, but I wasn't trusting my mind anymore. But here we go. We have answers. And then there is this, like, going from an able-bodied person and having that privilege of being able to do all the things to no longer being able to do all the things, you really have this significant grieving process where you have to just get past that you're, you know, normal, quote unquote, is no longer going to be your normal. And you have to really, like, ease into that and give yourself grace and forgive yourself because you are going to need to be confident in the next step, which is facing what you're dealing with. And that is not going away at any moment in time. You're going to manage it and all of the things, but you really have to grieve it, definitely, and then go into the next step. And then, you know, there's all the stuff afterwards. I mean, I totally broke down, like, you know, 3 years later, I totally broke down and cried a couple weeks ago because my teeth are falling out of my head. Literally. I'm like, you know, 10K deep in dental procedure stuff. And I just feel sometimes like, okay, here's another hurdle that I have to climb up. And, you know, like when you relapse with your Epstein-Barr virus, it was like, oh my gosh, like how long is this going to be? But
it feels like with chronic illness, you continuously are learning new things and continuously realizing, oh, so this is connected. And, oh, that's connected.
It's, yeah. Nobody told me about that. Yeah. Nobody told me that this would be another issue. So, it's just a lot.
Yeah, just a lot.
Yeah.
But, we kind of, originally, we've kind of talked about wanting to have a podcast.
For a long time.
A long time.
Too long.
Probably like 2 years, because we love podcasts.
Yes.
And so.
Murder casts.
Yes, we love morbid things.
Yes, definitely.
So, we were like, well, we don't want to do another murder podcast because
there's just too many and they're all so great.
And they're so good.
I can't compete.
They're all so good. So how can we kind of, I don't know, add something new to the mix? And then we learned that a lot of COVID patients.
Long haulers
are having the same symptoms as us.
Yes. And getting diagnosed with POTS, which, you know, I mean, obviously this is like a super crazy virus and we'll see how this all, you know, goes forward. But I think it kind of having this whole year of lockdowns and shelter in place and all those things, it has put a lot of other able-bodied people in a position where they cannot do all the things. And, you know, I don't know how able-bodied people feel about that, but it's a little bit of, I think for us, you know, normal to just not be able to go like, and do things. Yeah, like I'd love to go out and, like, you know, get dinner and drinks and stuff, but it's so hard. It's so hard. And so I think, you know, I hope that we can shed light on like a myriad of chronic illnesses because there are so many and talk to a lot of people and just help, you know, other people searching the podcast apps looking for, you know, oh, answers. This is what I'm dealing with. I'm going to search it or I think this is what I have and I'm going to look it up. And like,
which we totally did.
Yes.
We totally
so
were
much.
Searching the internet, searching Apple Podcasts or Spotify, searching for anybody who could relate or anybody who had answers. And so for us to be able to offer that to other people is just such an honor.
Yes, very. And just really exciting. And we want to laugh with you guys. And we hope that you enjoy this with us. And if you had...
keep listening.
Yeah. And we hope you connect with us. On, you know, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter.
Yeah, so.
Facebook.
I guess on that note, follow us on Instagram at.
This'll only hurt a little. And that is ILL, not will.
Ill.
Super ill.
Get it?
Also, you can follow us on Facebook. This'll only hurt a little. We have a Tweety.
A Twitter. Where we tweet things or chirp things. So
that was my best whistle.
So, on our Twitter, because they have a cap on how many words you can use, unfortunately. It is CNJ the podcast or CNJ the pod. But our username is This'll Only Hurt a Little the podcast. So you can find us there and also on TikTok, which is also This'll Only Hurt a Little. And we posted only one TikTok, but go look at it.
Yeah,
it's really cute.
We're beginning.
You can see the behind the scenes of where we record and everything like that, which is super fun. And yes. We love to connect with you guys on social media. We love all the DMs we've been getting, and we're so excited to hear all of you talk and share your stories.
Yeah. And so private message us on Instagram if you feel that you have like some really great information and you can contribute to this podcast.
We don't only want to like talk about chronic. We want to include everybody. So if you have something to share, if you have chronic illness, or even if you want to talk about mental health, because we feel like
that's a chronic illness for sure.
Yeah. We feel like that's totally part of this, and definitely like our mental health has been affected by chronic illness.
So the first thing my neurologist said was we're going to prescribe you beta blockers and this medication and an antidepressant because one affects the other. I mean, if you are struggling with mental illness, you physically feel that. And if you are struggling with chronic illness, you feel that mentally. So they're one and the same. And we want to hear all about everything that is going on with you guys. And we want to cover all the things. So please let us know.
Reach out to us.
And have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.